Today with us, we have Dr. Alexander White, also known as Sasha, who is an assistant professor in the sociology department, as well as in the history of medicine department here at Johns Hopkins University.
And today we are talking about his book, Epidemic Orientalism, Race, Capital, and the Governance of Infectious Disease, which was published this year by Stanford University Press. And so this is part of our colloquium series of mini episodes because the first History of Medicine colloquium this semester was the launch of Sasha's book back in the beginning of February.
Yes, yes, yes. And one thing that I would be remiss not to mention is that Dr. White is also the Associate Director for the Center for Medical Humanities and Social Medicine, which sponsors this podcast.
Yeah. Thanks, Sasha.
Enjoy.
So we are interviewing you today as part of the mini episode series where we interview people who have done colloquia here at Hopkins. But your colloquium was a little bit different because it was also the launch of your book, Epidemic Orientalism. So we are going to talk about that a bit. Listeners may recognize Alexander Sasha White's voice and name because he was also featured on our Black Beyond Data episode from a while back in February. So yeah, we're excited to talk to you about your book.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's great to be back. Do I like get frequent flyer points or something? Or is this like SNL where, you know, there's a special club if you if you're a guest a certain number of times?
So we're here to talk about your recently published book, which has already been cited. Bravo. Round of applause. Could you possibly summarize, you know, what your book is about, some of the main arguments, you know, things like that, how you came to the project and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the book is titled Epidemic Orientalism, Race, Capital, and the Governance of Infectious Disease. And the book emerges really out of my dissertation research that I completed in 2018. And the book's largely about how imperial legacies persist, and in particular persist in global health, how forms of thought and governance transfer from the 19th century to the present in particular ways. And I focus on, throughout the book, on the history of the International Sanitary Conventions, which emerged in the late 19th century and persist as the international health regulations today. And they remain, you know, as they were in the 19th century, the only widespread agreement on the management of international infectious disease across borders within humans. So I look at really the ways in which certain concerns and priorities for the management of infectious disease emerge out of colonial relations, in particular, European imperial anxieties about the threats of peoples outside or within colonial sites navigating around the world and ultimately traveling to Europe. So I draw on Edward Said's concept of Orientalism to discuss the ways in which this particular vision of the West as being a site which needs to be protected from infectious disease threat comes to emerge and then ultimately comes to, as I argue, frame ways of regulating disease still in the present.
That's great. Thank you. And so you said that this was your PhD dissertation. So can you tell us a little bit about how you came to this topic? Like, why focus on this? What led you to this?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's pretty weird, right? Because I think, you know, what led me to this project ultimately was kind of a failed dissertation idea, which emerged in part from my first research project in grad school. I was looking at this moment of twin epidemics of smallpox and plague in British-controlled Cape Town in 1901. And I was trying to understand basically why plague provoked massive racially segregating responses from the colonial government in Cape Town, while smallpox, a disease which had been more persistent in the city and actually had higher cases at the time, didn't provoke the same response. And this was work that I was doing at the same time that the West African Ebola epidemic was really, Ebola virus disease epidemic was really expanding. We were seeing forms of, if not racially based, but certainly class-based and violent militarized quarantines in the Liberian capital city of Monrovia. So the seeds of this project really emerged from recognizing that moment in 1901 Cape Town and seeing particular valences with the present. And, you know, it led to me kind of developing a project or an initial dissertation project to look at actually what are the effects of 2 years of what we would now call social distancing, you know, on communities in, you know, after an epidemic, and focusing on Monrovia as a case. So the seeds of this project emerged when I was leaving Monrovia. And this was shortly after the epidemic. There were zero cases of Ebola virus disease left in Liberia. But as I was leaving, I suddenly found myself experiencing or being a part of something that actually I think we're all quite familiar with now, which was, you know, after 3 years of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, the experience of significant and strict biosecurity measures at an airport, and especially when I was trying to leave Liberia, and these particular forms of sanitary controls, which I didn't experience going to Liberia, but became very obvious and present leaving. My temperature was taken, you know, four times from arrival to the airport to jumping on the plane. And there was significant technological architectures of biosurveillance at a small airport that really didn't have comparable technologies in other ways. You know, upon arrival at the airport, I had to fill out a kind of equivalent of a sanitary landing card, which we're familiar with now with COVID, which kind of asks questions about, you know, have you been in contact with anyone who's had Ebola virus disease in the last 14 to 21 days? Where have you traveled throughout the country, et cetera, et cetera? And from there, you know, you pass down this external card or outside of the airport, where, you know, you're confronted with a thermal imaging camera and a TV screen that's showing your kind of temperature against your temperature. You show up as white against this black background as you're walking up, and then your temperature is taken by a non-contact thermometer. And what they would do is they would take the temperature and actually write your temperature in Celsius on the back of on the sticker, and then put that on the back of your passport. And essentially, that temperature had to match with the temperature that's taken right before you enter the plane. And then once we arrived in Casablanca, I was on my way to London, and we arrived in Casablanca en route, and everyone was scanned by airport personnel in full biohazard suits. And this was, you know, a vastly different experience from that of going to Monrovia. And I was fascinated by what sort of structures and systems organize contemporary forms of control, and why do we see these kinds of divergences? And this is where actually the connection between the Cape Town project, actually focused very significantly on the international sanitary conventions, came to merge with my present interests with the international health regulations. And then COVID happened, which also expanded the project.
So actually, this conversation about your own experience and this allusion you've made to COVID makes me want to skip to the very last question that we usually ask people in these mini episodes, which is, how does your historical work relate to questions and problems in medicine and healthcare today? You know, there are such clear connections for me in your work in epidemic.
Orientalism.
Thank you. I almost said imperialism. I mean, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, that was actually one of the potential titles.
Okay, so I'm not too far off. So epidemic orientalism, though. So I can definitely draw some very clear connections. So I'm wondering if you can speak a bit to how your work connects to today.
Yeah, well, I mean, I when I envisioned the book, I thought the book was going to be primarily, you know, a piece about a kind of durability of imperial forms of thought and Western imperial forms of thought. I didn't expect it to be quite as pertinent or of his interest to as large an audience as it is now, given that there's a lot to say about the ways in which and about the ways in which we've been living our lives for the last 3 years, and about the things we've seen and in terms of responses to COVID, both at a policy level, but also in terms of, you know, I think the racisms and xenophobias we've seen around the world, especially broadly anti-Asian and explicitly anti-Chinese hate in the United States and elsewhere. You know, this book that starts in the 19th century becomes shockingly prescient, unfortunately. And the preface of the book opens up with an acknowledgement of this violence, which I think is critical because for so many people grappling with the intersection of infectious disease threat and the framing and stigmatizing and blaming of broadly Asian and East Asian populations for the spread of disease is not a new phenomenon, despite it seeming to have been a novel occurrence in 2020. And this history of disease and xenophobia has old roots that I explore in the book. And I think that, you know, this work speaks to the importance of looking at these histories when we see present day formations of the same ideologies and the same tropes, and recognize that not only these tropes are not new, these ideologies are not new, but they're actually emblematic of the sort of structures that we create when we try to manage and control infectious disease.
And I love the preface. I thought was really, really effective. And I love that you start with these cartoons that play on this xenophobia in a really visual and kind of visceral way. So yeah, as an art historian, I appreciated that use of visual culture from the outset.
Thanks for that, Sasha. And additionally, though, thinking about you saying how this book emerged out of a failed project and then mentioning work, you know, research from South Africa to Monrovia to the UK, and the work that you're doing here at Johns Hopkins, which is, you know, so important, especially the work you're doing with graduate students and a bunch of the grants that you have already received and that you're applying for. I say all of that to ask, you know, what role does this book have in your wider research and projects and interests in both, you know, sociology and history of medicine?
So that's a big question. I think, you know, my interests broadly as a researcher involve how domains of scientific knowledge, how domains of financial knowledge intersect to produce, you know, categories of subjectivities, whether it's citizenship and also, you know, whether it's criteria by which to exclude populations from certain areas of movement, certain access to rights, certain privileges, certain possibilities. And whether it's, you know, the formation and commodification of human life and slavery in relation to the transatlantic slave trade, or whether it's, you know, the description and identification of certain populations in the international sanitary conventions to control the movement of people across the Red Sea, for instance. So I think this work is really, you know, it tried to fill a hole in sociology, for instance. And I think there's very little work on colonial medicine or even the 19th century in health on a global perspective or in a global perspective. And I think that the, you know, this is really why I turned so much to the field of history and medicine. And that's ultimately why, you know, I was able to pivot once here at Johns Hopkins to a department of the history of medicine, because I had to teach myself a lot of this and these materials and these methods that historians use really in order to do this project. So, you know, I think in terms of my work in mentoring and with graduate students, you know, I really want my students to develop interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary or transdisciplinary approaches to their research, employing, you know, whether it's anything from interview methods to various archival approaches, you know, also employing and not being afraid to use theory to explain the force and power of things and naming concepts, which, you know, I think sometimes that sociology broadly does a lot of history perhaps doesn't engage in as much of this. But I think that's, you know, those areas of the book where this book attempts to really speak out. I know this has been a long answer, but my PhD advisor, Julian Goh, told me that, you know, you write books for your graduate students so that you push open spaces for them to work where there might have been epistemic silencing or violence. So, you know, I think of the field of sociology, especially sociology, is not effectively grappled with either the colonial and imperial roots of the discipline, like I think anthropology has in large part, but also hasn't grappled effectively with the role of empires producing the modern world and modern forms of thought and the ways in which that's sedimented into our present day. So I wrote this book so that, you know, hopefully future graduate students of mine and others, you know, will be able to look at something that speaks to imperial legacies in medicine, that speaks to theorists that you haven't seen, at least in American sociology, like Stuart Hall or Edward Said, and say, well, you know, that book did it, you know, I can too, and I can do it. I can employ this work and I can employ these modes and, you know, conduct the research projects that I want to in the best way possible.
That's really nice to hear, actually. And that's good advice or a good framework to kind of pass along. But just to wrap up, we'd like to ask people, is there anything that really surprised you about this research, whether that's archival or experiential, of actually putting together the book?
Yeah, I think that was the most terrifying thing. And this isn't to kind of, you know, toot my own horn or speak to the accuracy of the book, but I think what was terrifying about this was that once, you know, we got to 2020 and COVID emerged, and really I think between January and March, when you start to very clearly see what COVID was going to become as a global pandemic, and then continuing on was just, you know, how much the arguments in the book anticipated what was going to happen. That was terrifying. You know, historians and sociologists both, you know, were told not to predict the future. And I didn't, want to or didn't, and I don't think this is what this book is doing. Certainly bad things happen when sociologists and historians try to be predictive. But on the other hand, for me, it was a bit both frightening and also a study in how powerful historical analysis can be. Understanding our present moment, right? That wasn't future predicting, but rather, you know, an act of contextualization. It became very useful for me in navigating the same experiences that everyone else was going through in terms of, you know, suddenly being isolated and needing to protect one's community and oneself.
Sasha, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for doing the hard work. Congratulations on the publication. I'm looking forward to reading, signing, and sitting with your book. And yeah, we'll see you soon in the halls.
Yep, I'm around. Thanks so much.